August 1st, 2018, there is a celebration at Verizon. Staff are toasting a farewell to their CEO, Lowell McAdam. People are sharing their fondest memories of his achievements and thanking him for his 7 years of leading the company. There's laughter, speeches, and a positive atmosphere. But beneath the laughter and speeches, the air is heavy with a very different emotion, a tense anxiety. In reality, Verizon is balancing on a knife's edge. They had just spent billions on a segment that is a colossal failure. Now, everyone is slightly nervous. Leadership minds are heavy as they think, how the heck do we pay off $150 billion in debt?
And we begin this morning in Washington, where a major vote could change the way we browse the internet.
McAdam had left the company in a dangerous state as the most fragile telecommunications company. Verizon's future had little room forever. But how did they get here? What led Verizon to this dangerous position? The very same day 7 years ago, McAdam took the helm of Verizon. He has massive plans for the telecommunications giant, but first, there's something he needs to do. He needed to regain ownership of Verizon Wireless. This was by far their most profitable division, but there was a problem. 45% of it was owned by another telecom giant, Vodafone. Why did another company own part of this one division? Well, in 2000, back when Verizon was called Bell Atlantic, the two companies formed a joint venture, Verizon Wireless. It was actually its own independent company with two gigantic parents. At this time, both companies were primarily in wired services like landlines, but this new venture was Bell Atlantic and Vodafone's first step into the world of wireless mobile phones. Naturally, this industry was about to explode. About a dozen years later, Verizon Wireless was unbelievably profitable. In 2011, they had generated over $70 billion in revenue and had an EBITDA margin of 44.8%, which was really, really impressive. But remember, Verizon only inherited about half of this. The other half was going to Vodafone. To achieve his long-term plans, McAdams wanted to secure this extra revenue. He wanted to claim all of it. So, in 2013, Verizon came to an agreement with Vodafone. They would buy out their 45% stake for $130 billion. That's a lot of money, but I think you can see the reasoning. Immediately, the company secured a new, colossal stream of revenue. Looking at their 2014 annual report, Verizon Wireless generated $87.6 billion in wireless revenues, an increase of 8.2% over 2013. Not only was this segment growing fast, it was now all going to Verizon. But this move came with a significant downside. No company just has $150 billion lying around, especially in 2014. To finance this deal, Verizon secured a colossal $61 billion bridge loan. They also issued a $49 billion bond offering, meaning they were borrowing even more money from investors. Yet, this didn't deter McAdams. All things considered, it was the right move as it was a guaranteed jump in their revenue. With his confidence bolstered, he quickly moved ahead with the next step in his plan, which in retrospect wasn't as well thought out. In 2015, Verizon acquired AOL for $4.4 billion, then just 2 years later, they acquired Yahoo for $4.5 billion. These seem like strange purchases, but McAdams had huge ambitions for them. He was going to challenge the rule of Facebook and Google. I know. A wild ambition, so what was his plan? If you don't remember AOL, they were the biggest dial-up internet service in America, and at one point, the most recognizable web brand in the US. Their company history is insane. They grew so big, so fast, that they actually bought Time Warner for the biggest merger in history at the time. But as you probably guessed, dial-up quickly disappeared and was replaced by broadband, and AOL was ironically spun off from Time Warner. Their story is very similar to Yahoo, the poster child for the early web and the dot-com bubble, which quickly shrank in the 2000s. So why did McAdams bet on these two companies and pay about $9 billion for them? Well, both of these companies had gone through a metamorphosis. AOL was now a digital advertising platform. Like Facebook, they provided targeted ads across their different platforms, like TechCrunch and the Huffington Post. McAdams was especially interested in their ad technology, More specifically, their programmatic advertising, an automated system for buying and selling digital ad space. Yahoo, on the other hand, still had 1 billion monthly active users in 2016 across Yahoo Mail, Finance, Sports, and Tumblr, which at the time was a gigantic social media platform. McAdam wanted Verizon to go all in on digital advertising, to provide digital ads and challenge Facebook and Google, which were both generating absurd revenue from targeted ads. With AOL's ad targeting technology and Yahoo's vast platforms, McAdams merged the two into a new company, Oath, a giant digital media division. Their goal? Building a media and advertising powerhouse. Unfortunately for Verizon and McAdams, though, they had fallen into a common conglomerate trap. Immediately, Verizon laid off huge amounts of staff at AOL and Yahoo, including 2,100 people at Yahoo. With Oath fully underway, things were already looking bleak. In late 2017, Oath reported quarterly revenue of $2 billion. Not bad, but when compared to their competitors, things were looking rough. That same year, Facebook's annual revenue was just shy of $40 billion and Google was over $95 billion. Then came more layoffs. Before the end of 2017, Oath laid off another 560 employees, as profits were far lower than expected. So, what went wrong? As most people predicted, they were failing against the existing tech giants, and there were many reasons at play. For starters, they had spent billions on old, outdated brands, and had tried to convince advertisers to risk their budgets when they were already entrenched in Meta and Google. Then comes the problem of data. Even with all of Oath's brands and AOL's ad technology, their data was minuscule compared to Google and Facebook, both of which can sell marketers on their ability to collect data from and show ads to well over a billion active users. To make matters worse, digital ads were changing and not in favor of Oath. Click-through rates were plummeting and ad spend was shifting towards social platforms like Facebook. At this time, ad blockers were also skyrocketing. Between 2014 and 2018, ad blocker users had jumped from 240 million to almost 700 million, which worked against Oath's different ad platforms. Verizon had bought outdated brands to fight against giants in an industry that was moving away from them. Verizon couldn't have made things harder for themselves, which makes it even more hilarious given their ambition. To give you an idea of how overconfident Verizon was, they reportedly had an end-of-year goal of $10 billion in revenue from these ventures, which they missed by $8.2 billion. This brings us back to our CEO, Lowell McAdams. By this point, he was feeling the full consequences of his mistakes. McAdam announced his retirement in June of 2018, less than 12 months after Oath was officially formed. His goal had backfired. He had done some great things at Verizon, but got carried away, overextended, and made risky bets too fast. Yet, it's hard to say why exactly. Maybe he was feeling the investor pressure to move into the digital ad space and expand Verizon. Maybe he felt the need to leave a mark and go out with a bang. Yet, it's not just Verizon who made these strange bets. Their biggest competitor, AT&T, also made a huge blunder with their acquisition of Time Warner. Hope someone's keeping count of how much dumb money has been burned on internet media acquisitions in this cycle. Despite his early success, McAdams had left Verizon in a difficult spot. Verizon needed someone who could turn things around. In the midst of the Oath crisis, after McAdams announced his retirement, the board of directors met to make one crucial decision. Who will lead Verizon? Their digital advertising bet hadn't worked. They needed to commit resources elsewhere, so they brought in Hans Vestberg. August 1st, 2018, Hans Vestberg steps into the role of CEO. Hans was previously the CEO of Ericsson, a Swedish telecom company, and joined Verizon as the chief technology officer. Only 1 year at Verizon, he was appointed as CEO. Vestberg had a heavy burden. Verizon had a failing business division it had just spent $9 billion on, but to make matters worse, it had massive debt, $112 billion, most of which had come from McAdams' Vodafone buyout. Yet, he couldn't just focus on the debt. Growth at the telecom giant was slow. Wireless wasn't experiencing the same explosive growth it used to. Between 2017 and 2018, revenue only grew by 3.9%, Not bad, but in a saturated industry with slowing growth, the pressure was mounting. Vestberg was at the center of the tension: pay off the debt or secure the company's future. Soon, he realized what he had to do. But first, he had a mess to clean up. Vestberg wasn't as fond of Oath as McAdams was, which was now called Verizon Media Group. It was a money sink and a poor attempt to compete with Google and Facebook. Mere months after becoming CEO, Oath received a $4.5 billion write-down. This essentially means that Verizon acknowledged that it overpaid for these brands, and now it was looking for an exit. They stated that increased competitive and market pressures throughout 2018 have resulted in lower than expected revenues and earning. I think that's putting it lightly. In the meantime, Vestberg began his plan to secure Verizon's future. He first started to bolster their core business. As a telecommunications giant, most of the revenue came from providing phone and internet service, but their competitors were offering something they didn't. Comcast had bought NBC Universal to offer cable and more value. Then, in response, AT&T bought DirecTV and then Time Warner to improve their offering as well. Verizon needed to compete, and Vestberg knew they could do this without spending billions on acquisitions through simple partnerships. So, in 2020, Verizon Wireless added Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus to their internet and mobile plans at no extra cost to consumers. This was an insane boost in value, and naturally, it brought in a lot of new customers, and they didn't even have to acquire giant media conglomerates to offer it. That being said, Vestberg still had a difficult decision to make. This part of their business was slowing down, and they needed to commit to a new part of the industry that was growing fast. The telecom industry was moving towards one clear area: 5G, super-fast wireless internet. McAdam had made small investments in 5G, like the $1.8 billion purchase of XO, but this clearly wasn't his main focus. They had only rolled out 5G to 5 cities by the end of McAdam's time. Not only that, they had focused on something called millimeter wave 5G, which essentially means they had ultra-fast speeds but terrible coverage, only covering small areas in dense cities. By this point, there was a massive risk of falling behind, especially with T-Mobile's aggressive 5G investments and huge head start. They realized the only way to win was with coverage, so Verizon had to make some bold moves. But that would unfortunately mean more debt, of which Verizon already had over $130 billion worth. But Vestberg eventually decided that there was no other way. They needed to take bold action, which came at the FCC C-band auction in 2021. Every other telecom giant was preparing to spend big money at this auction, but what even was it and why did it matter? Well, there's only a limited amount of radio spectrum, and multiple industries need access to it. So the US government auctioned the rights to radio frequencies, and the bidding was fierce. Here, Verizon had to bid against T-Mobile and AT&T, meaning it was a battle of the giants with billions on the line. Verizon ended up securing between 140 and 200 MHz, which was a great speed with wide coverage. This more than doubled their spectrum for 5G to over 100 million people in the US, but it cost them greatly: $52.9 billion. Their debt leapt once again to $179 billion. This, however, was a necessary evil. It was more debt, but Verizon needed to secure this frequency to stay in the 5G race. Now, Verizon needed to cut down costs, and Vestberg knew exactly where to start. In 2021, Verizon sold Oath to Apollo Global Management for $5 billion. They had lost about $4 billion on the investment, but at least now, this strange distraction was done and gone, and they had a bit more cash to address their massive debt. So, how is Verizon doing today? Well, in 2024, Verizon reported revenues of $134.8 billion, a slight increase from the previous year. Net income rose to $17.5 billion, up 51% from 2023, resulting in a profit margin of 13%, an improvement from 8.7% in 2023. They're luckily in a long-term sustainable business, but they're also managing a mountain of debt, which makes things much more complicated. Verizon's debt-to-equity ratio is 1.32, which measures their debt against the market cap of the company. A higher number is worse, and as for 2024 data, Verizon is the highest in the industry, higher than T-Mobile, AT&T, Vodafone, and Comcast. Verizon will probably carry this debt for many decades, or even indefinitely. And while it is in a better spot, there are still massive challenges ahead. But at least they're not the only one. You might have heard me mention some strange moves from their biggest competitor, AT&T. As it turns out, AT&T made much bigger and much more costly mistakes alongside Verizon. Watch this video next to learn how AT&T almost destroyed itself. But until then, I'm Hari, and I'll see you guys on the next one.